Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
So good afternoon. Thanks everyone for joining us today and discussing the year that was for private business credit. I think we can all agree that at the start of the year, we did not think that this is how 2020 would have gone. And it has been quite the year, to say the least. On the agenda today, we'll take a look back on the year to analyze where we have been and look ahead to where we're going in 2021. The structure of today's conversation will be candid and forum-like, so I encourage you to drop any questions you might have into the Q&A box, and I'll do my best to make sure all the questions are answered as we go. But if we do miss anything, we'll get back to you shortly after the webinar via email. In case we haven't met before, my name is Melanie Elise, and I'm the manager of the investor relations team here at Yield Street. It's such a pleasure to host this webinar today. I'm incredibly lucky to work alongside our guests every day, and I'm thrilled to be able to introduce them. Some of you might already know them from previous webinars. Today, I'm joined by Larry Curran, Managing Director of Private Business Credit, and Barbara Anderson, Head of Underwriting for Private Business Credit. Larry, Barbara, welcome to the webinar. Thanks for joining.
Hi, Mel.
Hey.
Happy to be here.
So let's jump right in. So Larry, this has been quite a year for your department. You and Barbara joined Yield Street back in June during the peak of the pandemic and hit the ground running. Can you tell us a bit about the key elements of the business and how it is set up for opportunity in the midst of this chaotic environment?
I can. You know, Mel, it's crazy that a year ago today, Barbara and I were in New York meeting with Yield Street without masks, without any problem. We actually celebrated our two-person company holiday party with a Radio City Rockettes Christmas extravaganza while we were there, and we were talking about coming aboard to launch the private business credit new vertical. And so now that we're a year later, it's crazy because obviously our discussions got a little deferred as the country locked down in the first quarter, and it kind of continued to defer our entrance to the business. But as kind of the chaotic level got kind of further and further down the road, it actually oddly presented more opportunity. When you're in private business credit and there's disruption in a pandemic like what we have right now, you know, it creates some perfect storm opportunities, which Barb and I clearly saw before we got here. And that included A, the platform was already here, already hundreds of thousands of members on the site, already proven track record, ability to distribute high quality assets. We had market disruption, and in any market disruption, people stop and pause, except for the businesses that are continuing to grow. And they need to continue to find funding, and that's what creates opportunities. And the unique piece about us is that we got to come in the middle in full view and make our choices in the performance level of what was happening in the pandemic. We didn't ride it in, but we got to view it as it was going on, so we got to make decisions in real time. And then really, when we came in, we really wanted to focus on the things that Barb and I have focused on over the years. Number one, growing companies. And regardless of where you are in the economic cycle, people can grow and leverage situations. Everything from outdoor activities and camping and RVs, which have really boomed because we wanted to be outside because we were all locked inside, to, you know, if you had Zoom stock or other things that, you know, who would have known that Zoom would become the universal language of 2020. no fault against Microsoft and the others, but I think that's most known. So we looked for companies that were growing and we found them. We looked for companies with strong management and they had a growth trajectory that wasn't just crisis orientated. In other words, it's not going to end when we get out of the crisis, but it was just a business that's lending itself and working fine as we look to go out and emerge. So we really had a culmination of timing. The platform was right for it. We saw what we wanted to do when we got here. And so we really launched the business in June. And certainly from June through now, we're just crossing over $100 million in originations. And for anybody that's just joining us, you know, that's not a small task here at Yield Street, but that means we've underwritten, you know, closed, funded, and we've actually made those investments available. And almost at this point, 100% of those are almost fully subscribed through our investor base. So that in itself is illustrative that there was demand. They like what we were putting out and it's mostly consumed. There's a few million dollars left on the site today and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But it was really kind of a perfect storm that led us to today. And we're excited at what tomorrow holds for us in 21. So we're excited to talk more about that today.
Thanks, Larry. Yeah, we'll get into that. So Barbara, it seems like there are quite a number of opportunities that have aligned with our four pillars that Larry had just touched on. Can you give us a brief overview of the private business credit offerings that have launched on our platform so far?
Absolutely. Our first transaction was with our partner, Raystone Capital, in the supply chain finance space. And what's interesting here is historically, the original equipment manufacturers like General Motors and Ford realized early on that a healthy supply chain led to a healthy business for themselves. And that was only accentuated during the last recession and now again during the pandemic. So our first transaction was for a multi-billion dollar consumer product company that was actually growing prior to COVID, grew through COVID and continues to grow today. And we have a $45 million participation in Raystone's $135 million program for this company. And just to refresh everyone's memory, what we're doing in this program is Raystone is actually acquiring receivables from suppliers at a discount. And in turn, we are getting an irrevocable payment undertaking from the buyer to pay a fixed amount on a date certain. So in this instance, the supplier gets paid immediately and can redeploy the capital to make more of their products. And the buyer gets extended payment terms beyond the typical 30, 60, or 90-day terms that you would normally see. So in the first instance, we have 180-day payment terms. We launched a second transaction for a different supplier that is in the corrugated cardboard industry, along with lumber and other packaging supplies. You know, I can't imagine that, you know, everyone doesn't have something showing up to their doorstep in a cardboard box these days. And so another growing business, both before, during, and through COVID. In that case, we're looking at 120-day receivables from that particular supplier. And what this really does is it accelerates the asset conversion cycle for both the suppliers and for the buyers. And everyone, you know, benefits from that transaction. And we actually have a new supply chain finance opportunity that's launching for our corrugated supplier in the next coming days. So everyone should keep an eye out for that one as well. And then we did a transaction for a consumer finance company in the motorcycle loan space. And what I want to highlight here is, you know, in this particular opportunity, we have an operator that was growing. Motorcycling is certainly a socially distanced activity and demand for their loan products was strong. They had a good track record and they made a substantial investment in their technology, in their systems. And we didn't buy, you know, just any portfolio of receivables. We were very disciplined in what we were looking for. While the portfolio was randomly selected so that it looked like the whole portfolio, we also made sure that it was seasoned, on average 12 months. We also removed any defaulted and delinquent receivables from our random selection. And we instituted a 90-day buyback provision where we're almost at the end of that buyback now, at the end of November. And again, just to ensure that our selection was in fact random and that there wasn't any adverse selection as part of what we did at our closing. And then we structured our transaction so that 100% of the cash flow comes to us to repay our advances. So that includes the entire yield on the portfolio, as well as all of the principal payments. And what that does is it results in an accelerated repayment. And so far, we're very pleased that we're ahead of schedule on our projected repayment on that particular investment. So we expect that we'll, you know, stay ahead there. So three, you know, interesting transactions, all growing and doing well during COVID. And, you know, we're looking for more opportunities like those.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. So I guess it's fair to say that you guys have been pretty busy since you've been here. So for those listening, as Barbara just mentioned, there are two offerings that she had touched on a bit that are actually still open and accepting investment requests, including Supply Chain Financing 1B and the Motorcycle Loan Portfolio. And you can find more of those details and submit an investment request as interested on the offering page. So Larry, as the year comes to an end, where do we go from here?
Well, as the year comes to an end, one of the things that we're always faced with is we have plenty of demand, and now we're dealing with the balance of operational resources. That includes lawyers and the activity field auditors. Barbara and I have several deals that we're trying to get the, you know, good faith deposits in so that we can get a field auditor underway. And I think that that's key for everybody to understand that we use third-party well-known companies to go out and basically do the litmus test on the hypothesis of the business's revenues, performances, et cetera. And we, you know, get a full report on the access of that before we would ever take and go through to credit committee and look to be funding any of our transactions. So right now, I think we're just trying to make sure we have enough physical human resources to get the workload that we have done before year end. And, you know, it's going to be no small task. That should put us a bit over the $100 million mark for the past 6 months that we've been operating here. So a great addition to the team. Super excited to be here. And there's going to be a lot of new opportunities in 21. You know, we've seen some bullish nature of people are thinking about the vaccine coming out. Things like supply chain finance, as we reconnect and the world starts to become vaccinated, the global economy will kind of come back online, and the need for supply chain financing, we think, is going to be a big part of the growth of our opportunities. And what we want to make sure that people understand is that we're trying to create an opportunity across all of Yield Street's verticals for a diverse, both different types of risk, different industries, non-equity correlated income portfolios. I mean, we're there to drive income for the most part. And whether it's short-term income, we have supply chain one at 180 days. Supply chain two is very short at 120 days, more of a cash management type program. And then something like the motorcycle lease or the motorcycle loan program that Barbara just talked about is a fully amortizing three-year payment. So depending on what the needs and the balance are, we're trying to provide multiple opportunities that people, whether they're retired, planning for retirement, using their cash flows to support a kid in college or themselves, that they can have both interest-only payments, different tenors, they can have fully amortizing, or they can have a combination of both. And that puts us into a position where, as we look at new offerings in 21, we look at what are investors like, and supply chain went very quickly. motorcycles went quickly, but we're seeing just a variation of demands and tenors. And so we're trying to meet that need. And that need's going to come to us through commercial equipment. There's a lot of commercial opportunities to finance growing businesses. Barbara and I were working on one this afternoon that's, you know, got some really interesting state-of-the-art technology that I think people are really going to like. It's got a great story being used in a lot of high-profile situations. We're going to see a commercial accounts receivable. Again, people that are growing their business, but other businesses may be paying slower because of the economic cycle. So the opportunity to get in there and provide cash flow until those payments come back and cycle through is going to be out there. Interestingly enough, the auto market has really been disrupted, and there's a lot of capital seekers in the space, which is good because that allows us to kind of pick and choose who meet our parameters. Who can we, you know, structure a deal that is insulating us from the traditional risks a little bit better and a little bit smarter? We are hoping to have more consumer installment and kind of retail point of purchase originations, everything from medical and dental procedures to some others coming in the future year. And then we're also looking at some infrastructure type financing, where people are building infrastructure projects, bridges, you know, roads, and other things that seem kind of really bread and butterish. But there are just some interesting opportunities where we can get into some staples of just infrastructure that we can provide above market yields. And that creates a really excellent opportunity for us as we look into 2021. So we're very excited.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. I just want to go back for a second. We did have a question come in about the supply chain financing investment. We're being asked, what are the average factoring rates that you're lending at? Is this receivable factoring or merchant advance?
It's definitely not merchant advance. And Barbara, if you'd like to explain how the process works and supply chain, it's a little different than factoring, and it's a little different than merchant cash advance as well.
Yeah, you know, supply chain finance is also referred to as reverse factoring. In this particular transaction, we are looking at a buyer-centric program. So what happens is the buyer approves an invoice for payment with our partner, Raystone. And that's how we know that there is an amount certain and a date certain payment on that particular invoice. Raystone then buys that receivable from the supplier at a discount. And the discount is very often somewhere between a rate that would be applicable to the much larger buyer, but is, you know, a little bit more, is a little bit less than what the supplier would pay to their factor or to their lender, but a little bit more than the credit risk of the buyer. So the discount rate is somewhere in between. And it does, again, two things. It enables the supplier to get cash right away to redeploy into new goods. And it gives the buyer a little bit more time to pay. So in supply chain one, we have 180-day terms with the buyer. And in supply chain financing two, that we launched about a month ago, we have 120-day terms with the buyer.
And those, Barbara, those purchase amounts are available if somebody logs into their account and looks at the underlying documents. You have the purchase price and the IPU payment price. So it shows you that, you know, we paid $23.5 million for the invoices. And next month in January, we start getting repaid the full amount of the discounted advance that we provided to the supply chain.
Right, that's right.
And we
Which is
make sure
almost
that
$25 million in payments. Right.
Yes, right. So if you want to see exactly what that is, please log in. The documents are there, and it will show you in each supply chain iteration what we paid for the invoices, what is going to be repaid on the maturity date. And that's what we'll be distributing to our investors beginning late January, early February, when the payments start coming in from the first round of supply chain financing one.
Great. Thanks. That was really helpful. Speaking of supply chain, we have another question. To date, you have done tens of millions in supply chain finance deals. Do you see this trend continuing through 2021?
I do. You know, as I said, the business originally got started with the OEMs and the major money center banks, and it has now come down a bit more to the middle market. And that's where Raystone, our partner, tends to focus. And I think more and more, you know, middle market companies are going to take advantage of a healthy supply chain through this supply chain financing mechanism. So I do think we're going to see more of these opportunities for middle market companies in the future, in 2021 and beyond.
And illustrative of that, Mel, would be that supply chain financing one's counterparty, the Raystone facility now almost 18 months ago started off at $5 million. Today, it's $135 million, and the company has been growing both organically and through some acquisitions. And so it's just continued to grow, more suppliers, more need. And today, again, we're a participant in a $135 million facility to this one counterparty, and we represent about $44.5 million of that. So we're working alongside other institutional investors that are expanding with this particular company. And we're going to expect to see more and more of these opportunities. And it seems to be popular with kind of the uncertainty of politics, new presidents, COVIDs and vaccines. It seems like our investors have really appreciated a short-term place to park capital until we kind of get through inauguration and other stuff. And that was part of our plan too, is give people a short-term opportunity. Let's make some money as we kind of unravel some clarity to where we think we can make more long-term bets. And I think that's exactly kind of where we are in the cycle. And we're going to expect to see, you know, some really great growth out of our supply chain partners. And we're looking, we just started vetting some additional potential partners as well in the channel. And just so everybody understands, supply chain is universal in almost every Fortune 500 company, but it's very inexpensive. I mean, it's like LIBOR plus 2 or 3% for the best, maybe not even that. It's a very widespread opportunity. But as banks got tighter, if you weren't a AAA credit, you couldn't get access. And so our counter operator at Raystone specifically had been the head of Citibank's supply chain finance. So we have somebody that took the bank, saw the opportunity for non-bankable supply chain, launched his business, is backed by some of the largest wealth managers in the country. So we have a great partner with extraordinary experience that is also integrated into the technology of some of the largest ERP solutions out there. So they have more and more inbound traction to getting more supply. And they, of course, love the partnership with us because we're building kind of fans of them as an originator. That's our process here. And then we can both grow on the platform together. So Raystone can grow, the businesses we support can grow, and our investors' portfolios can grow alongside. And that's really our big picture image over the years as we work together to put American businesses back in business.
Great. So sort of on that same thought, we did have one other question as it relates to supply chain. What, in your view, are the traditional risks in supply chain financing that could lead to less than forecasted returns?
Well, we're really looking at the underlying credit of the buyer. And where we stand is in the shoes of the trade suppliers and the critical vendors, you know, to that buyer. Right. So in both cases, there is senior secured debt in place to provide working capital. And a lot of times that working capital is in fact used to make payments to us. And if that's not the case, then the ordinary cash flows of the business would make the payment. But, you know, make no mistake, we are unsecured with respect to the two credits. And we are standing in the shoes of the trade. But again, in the one case, we're looking at a $2 billion revenue company. In the other case, we're looking at a $300 million revenue company that have a long track record of success and profitability. So we're taking the time to underwrite each of the credits for the short-term risk that we're taking.
And Mel, one other point on that too is keep in mind, as we mentioned, we came into this facility while it was running. And so our counter investors that are in the participation have been funding and getting repaid for longer than we've been involved. And we've seen over $150 million cycle in supply chain one to date, all paid on time. So with this particular product, it wasn't, you know, let's start big and hope it works out. But the company needs this product to continue its expansion. We're providing $135 million aggregately across our participation, and to not pay it in its trades where really the cost is shared between the supplier and the buyer. It's very cost effective. There's no reason not to pay it. The reason that you're doing this is to grow the business and use your cash flow more efficiently. And so again, we like the counterparty, we like our originator, we like the fact we have other institutional investors alongside us, and that how we decided to go back for supply chain financing 1B was that we had all of these payment history, and these invoices do pay weekly. We just happened to kind of pick one moment in time that pays 180 days later, but all of our partners are funding weekly and getting repaid weekly from a year and prior, if that makes sense. So we have a lot of working history in here, which has given us the comfort to expand this particular supply chain customer here.
And Mel, the other thing that I'll add is because we're part of an organized supply chain financing facility, we do get regular reporting from the buyers. And each time we're asked to fund another portfolio of receivables, we do look at the current financial information each and every time to make sure that the performance is where we expected it to be.
If you could, you know, our listeners have a couple questions, so I just want to make sure it gets answered while we're on this topic. If you could like narrow it down, would there be any particular drivers that could potentially lead to missing a target return?
Well, you know, you're talking about, you know, non-payment. So cash flow, the way that this is structured is it's really a one-time payment, right, at the end of the 120 or 180 day period. So if the company were to fall into some cash flow issues, there could be shortfalls in payments or delays in payments. So it would be, you know, a pretty significant, from where these companies are, it would be a pretty significant deterioration to get to the point where they wouldn't be able to draw on their credit facilities and they wouldn't have the cash flow sufficient to pay, you know, their critical trade vendors. So I think we're a long way from there, but, you know, never say never, right? But it would be a pretty substantial deterioration in their current financial performance for each of them.
Okay, that's really helpful. And one last question on this. Do we expect the buyer and supply chain financing one to enter into another agreement with us?
We do, actually. You know, we are hopeful that when we receive payments on our first invoices at the end of January and the early part of February, that we'll be able to acquire more of their vendors' receivables and enter into another 180-day payment program with them.
Perfect. Okay. And continuing the conversation here, so we touched on a little bit earlier some of the potential upcoming opportunities. Barbara, could you tell us a little bit more about what you expect to see from the market in the new year? Obviously, what the world has gone through and the mass amounts of volatility in the market, investors have to be thinking about alternatives as a serious investment opportunity now.
Yeah, and we hope that they will consider supporting growing businesses here in the US. And, you know, I just want to reiterate that, you know, everything that we do is, you know, with diversity in mind. You know, we like to bring different asset classes in different industries with different repayment terms and different tenors to the market for our investors so that they have alternatives to choose from. So you'll be seeing both consumer and commercial opportunities from us. Also, I'd like everyone to know that, you know, everything that we do is diligenced here at Yield Street. We use third parties where we can and where the expertise is warranted, but we look at everything ourselves from an underwriting perspective. And the other thing is that we're very disciplined in what we do. We stick to our knitting. We focus on what has worked in the past for our customers as well as for our investors. We try to stick to our knitting in what we do, and we know what works and what doesn't. And, you know, we focus on what does, and we don't spend a whole lot of time on what doesn't work.
Thanks. So obviously, because of pandemic and economic downturn, there are going to be a lot of American businesses still growing or trying to that are still in need of capital, as you'd mentioned. Are there any areas that you're shying away from at the moment?
One thing I'll say, you know, in the big picture is that we want our capital to go for growth. So we don't do a whole lot of straight refinancings where we're swapping, you know, one loan for a more expensive loan or one financing for a different financing. We always want some portion of our capital to be put toward the growth of the business. So that's the first thing. We see a lot of companies that are just looking for a different capital source or more of the same capital source. And that's not really what we're looking to do. There are some industries that we're probably not going to spend a lot of time focusing on right now. We actually had a supply chain transaction come in for store-based apparel retail. And I just didn't feel that this was the right timing for store-based apparel retail. I thought the risk was a little too much to be taking on during this particular holiday season. So we are choosy in what we look to do. We also pay attention to regulatory issues, whether they're existing regulatory requirements or what we think might be changing regulatory environments, particularly with the changing administration that we have right now. So on the consumer side, we're very focused on making sure that we stay ahead of the curve from a regulatory perspective. So those are some of the things that, you know, we consider as we're looking at new opportunities.
So actually, you just touched on it a little bit there with the regulatory changes. Has the pandemic changed your underwriting or investment parameters in any kind of way?
Well, you know, it is actually a benefit for us because when we joined Yield Street, we didn't have a portfolio. We started with, you know, a blank sheet of paper, and we were already in the pandemic. So we had a pretty good, you know, view as to how our current customers perform through the crisis. And that is definitely something that, you know, we look at each and every time. And now we have, you know, 6 or 8 months of history through the pandemic that we can analyze. I liken it to, would you rather be invested in the stock market in 2007 or 2009? Right? You'd much rather be there in 2009 than 2007. So that's in a way how Larry and I came here. So we have the benefit of knowing, you know, which industries, which customers are more affected than others by the pandemic. And we try to do our underwriting accordingly.
Thanks for that. So as we round out the conversation here, Larry, what are the growth plans for the asset class at Yield Street and expectations for a potentially growing team in the future here?
It's a lot. Right now, you know, we came in with, I think because we were in the pandemic, et cetera, just to kind of give everybody a view, we were set with a budget of about $50 million in the half a year that we were here. And if we would have hit that, that would have been fantastic under the circumstances. And we're going to likely double that. And so a couple of things that I want to make sure people understand is that we are less focused on a specific asset class than an asset that we can structure that has an operator, growth story, proper capitalization, and a plan of exit of how we get out of the train. So when you see something, if I say supply chain, it doesn't mean all supply chain. It means I like this fact pattern with this counterparty, with this set of circumstances specifically, not generically. And that is something I'm going to feel comfortable enough to put together and then put out to our investors. So I think that's super important. So as we go forward, part of what we laid out when we came here was that we want to set, if you look at our other businesses, real estate is a piece of real estate that we finance. It pays off. People get their capital and their profit back. Art, very similar. Shipping, very similar. Here, we're the private business credit. So we're financing ongoing growing businesses that will need more capital as we go. So kind of each boat we set sail on will have incremental opportunities as we grow. So what we wanted to do was give our investors the opportunity to start in, be in supply chain, find one, two, get repaid and say, oh, I kind of like this. What's coming up next? Well, we have supply chain 1B, 1C, 1D. That is what you can see in the future. Supply chain 2B, C, D. We're looking to do that so that people can be confident with their counterparties, Raystone, us. And we want to do that in other realms as well. We're going to see that in equipment leasing. We're going to see that in a little bit more consumer this year. And really just depending on, you know, stimulus coming out, because stimulus puts a lot of unaccounted for money that disrupts other lenders that often creates opportunities for us that are different, because we saw a lot of that where people are like, oh, I don't need money today. They passed on the bank money. PPP ran out and all of a sudden they need money now, and you have a unique opportunity to move fast. And that's the other thing, is the world is competitive, and Barbara and I have been competing in it for quite some time together. We've been together for 12 years, winning deals. We've funded hundreds of millions of dollars in transactions, and we want to continue to think Yield Street's mantra is to grow our customers, their trust, and their portfolios alongside with the businesses that need their capital to help them grow. And so when we are in balance, which means the customer's needs, which is the borrower, is willing to pay a yield that our investors are happy to accept for that risk, put it past Barbara and our team, we're gonna have some new hires this year for sure. We're gonna have to have some additional associates, probably what I would call a production manager, because we do have a lot of moving parts here. So we are looking to expand the team, operations, and I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't end up bringing to the market somewhere between as much as 300 and 500 million if we can execute to plan. So we're very excited at what 2021 has in store, and there's going to be a lot of unique new opportunities. So please stay tuned and watch carefully, because there's going to be a lot hitting on a regular basis.
Thanks, Larry. Yeah, it's definitely an exciting time for you guys and for Yield Street overall. I did want to actually ask one more question that came in that was a bit interesting. Have you considered the restaurant industry for supply chain financing? They seem to be a good candidate to help these people survive.
Again, what I will say to my head of underwriting mantra with Barbara is that a couple important things. Barbara doesn't mention it, but she's a 20-year turnaround manager, card carrier. So she's been in the bank industry, had, you know, dozens of turnarounds without losing any principal. I came from the bad debt industry, and where we met at Biome was a global distressed asset buyer. So we know how to deal in dysfunction, liquidation, charge-off, and post-charge-off. But here today, what we really want to focus on is we do want to help companies get on and through, but we don't want to help companies out of, we're not there to pull their irons out of the fire. That's not our mantra. We're too early in the game gaining the trust of our own investors here at Yield Street. And what we, therefore, you're going to hear it over and over again. If we've worked with a company, it's because they're growing. And if they're growing, we're going to see them iteratively on our site with more and more offerings. And we want to build the trust, the growth, and the offerings for our investors and our borrowers so that we can all kind of work together to grow those businesses that are most likely. We have seen some distress and some opportunities to do that. I heard some people talk about merchant cash advance. Barbara and I have lent hundreds of millions of dollars in merchant cash advance. It isn't one of our key focuses right now because there is so much small business volatility. So again, unless there's a compelling fact circumstances that we think we can block and tackle and, you know, preserve and protect our principal, we're probably not going to go there. And if you had any other comments, Barbara, that, you know, it's hard for me to get it past her. So she'll knock it down if she doesn't think that it's aligned with our overall story.
Well, you know, and Larry and I have done a lot of distress over the years. I spent, you know, more than a decade lending to store-based retailers. And, you know, over time, a third of them liquidated. It was just, you know, part of the business. And knock on wood, we got all of our money back, plus our interest and fees. So there is a way to do it. But here, we're really focused on safety, security, performance, growth. We have a little bit different view here right now. And I think there are enough opportunities with those type of companies that we really don't have to, you know, chase distressed right now.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And to all our listeners, you know, we would always love to hear from you and what you're interested in investing in. I mean, after all, we exist for you. And so feel free to always write into us at investments@yieldstreet.com. And we'd love to hear from you on that angle. So now, unfortunately, we are at time. So if you do have more questions, as I mentioned before, write into us and we'll get back to you. Remember to visit our invest page at yieldstreet.com to see all of our other open offerings, as well as the ones we mentioned today and that are available for private business credit. And lastly, we have our final Yield Street webinar of 2020 on Thursday at 3 p.m. featuring Cynthia Sachs, who is the head of our art finance department. So be sure to register and thank you so much. Thank you, Barbara and Larry. And I think this was really informative. So thanks everyone and have a great night.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to yieldstreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at yieldstreet.com. Thanks again for listening and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7-10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at yieldstreet.com.